This podcast is of a meeting of the White Lake Public Advisory Council and White Lake Association, in which the discussion of the remedial action plan and the proposed one for the White Lake leather site, often called the tannery site here in Whitehall. At this meeting, representatives of Horizon Environmental, Alan J. Riley, and Charlene McGue will talk about the past work done on the site, the investigation, the issues on the site, and what is proposed in the final remedial action or RAP plan. Also, Frank Ruswick, who's Special Assistant to the Director of Department of Environmental Quality, will be talking about the public's input into the process and how the DEQ sees what is happening. Also, Heather Hopkins, who's been the project engineer on the site for DEQ, will give some of her thoughts. And then there's a time for questions from the public and answers.
Kind of a description of what Genesco is going to be proposing to address that contamination, and then how the Department of Environmental Quality is going to review it and what the role of the public in that is going to be. So Genesco is going to present their proposal first, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit about what our role is going to be. And with me tonight is Heather Hopkins. Heather is our primary staff person on this site, is really the technical expert in understanding the situation and the issues we're going to need to address. So if you have technical questions, we're going to rely on Heather to address those. And she'll be making a few comments later, too. So again, welcome. We're real pleased to see such a big crowd. We appreciate the White Lake Association and the White Lake PAC organizing this, because it is a very important issue, and the community is a really important part of making decisions on this site. So I hope you learn a lot tonight. Give us a lot of good questions. Let us know what's on your mind so that we can make sure that as we go forward, we can address those issues. With that, I'll turn it over to Al.
Thanks, Frank. Can everybody hear all right, even in the back? Good? Okay, as Norm indicated, I'm Alan Riley. I'm Director of Environmental Risk Management with Horizon Environmental. With me tonight is Charlene McGue, who's the pro.
You're going to have to speak up.
Okay. With me tonight is Charlene McGue, who's the project manager for this project. Horizon works for Genesco in developing the remedial action plan for the Whitehall leather property. As Frank indicated, the presentation we'll give tonight will give you an overview of the proposed remedial action plan, which is the document that will be submitted to the state to propose the remedies to provide for final closure of the site. Before I get into the details of that final RAP, I thought I would give you a little bit of a primer, very little, 30-second primer on the Part 201 remedial response process for those of you that might not be familiar with the steps that are involved in getting a site of identified environmental contamination from first discovery to development and implementation of a final RAP. And then after that, go through a very brief history of what activities have gone on at the site. Some of you are probably very familiar with it. It's brief, but for those of you that are new to the project, it will be valuable context. And then after that, we'll get right into a discussion of the proposed remedy. The Part 201 is the part of the Michigan Code that relates to environmental response actions, the way we go about addressing sites of environmental contamination. It's analogous to the CERCLA program, and it's got a very established series of steps that you progress through, starting with a remedial investigation to define the vertical and horizontal extent of contamination, then proceeding through risk evaluation to identify any risks associated with the presence of hazardous substances in soil or groundwater or other media. And then once the risks are identified, developing and implementing a plan to mitigate those identified risks. In addition, there's provisions for doing interim response actions. Those are actions to actually address source material prior to approval of a final wrap at a site. All of these terms will be used in the remainder of the presentation. Generally speaking, when this process was first envisioned, it was envisioned as a straight line progression, but through our experience, that's not the way it works. Generally, you don't just go from one step to the next. It's fairly fluid. You might start a remedial investigation, do a risk assessment, and even get all the way to a wrap, and then realize that there are some data gaps that you need to fill. Circumstances might change in terms of the end use of the property, because under Part 201, it's a risk-based program, and the remedies are tailored to the land use that will be envisioned for the particular property. So you'll see this evidenced in the presentation. This is not a straight line progression. You tend to shift back and forth within the process as the needs of the remedial program dictate. Next slide. In terms of the specific application of the 201 process to the Genesco site, we've been working with the DEQ in close consultation and on an iterative basis for, since the early 90s on the property. There have been several voluntary remedial action plans put forward. Starting in 1999, the initial wrap was for a limited commercial industrial closure. That closure was basically developed to support the uses of the property. This had been a tannery. The notion was that we would clean it up to support some other industrial use. Subsequent to that, in March 2001, plans came forward to potentially bring this back for residential use, and Genesco looked at the site, reevaluated risks, and came up with a plan that might support residential redevelopment of the property. Between 2001 and 2005, there were a number of regulatory changes in the program, and there was some additional data collection and site characterization work done, and a third wrap was put forward, again in support of limited residential use. This was also about the time that South Shore Development was coming forward with its plans, which were a little bit more specifically detailed. As you'll see, and I'm going to go over in the next three or four slides, that there's been a significant amount of investigative risk evaluation and remedial engineering work conducted through all phases of wrap development, but particularly since 2005. The agency worked very closely with Horizon and Genesco. Work plans and evaluative documents were put forward and exchanged, and there was a lot of input provided by Heather Hopkins and other technical staff from the Grand Rapids District Office to get us where we are today, which is on the precipice of putting a wrap together and submitting it to the agency for final approval. The slides that follow represent how we got to the point where we are today, ready to put forward this 2009. Next slide. Genesco performed a remedial investigation in multiple phases. As I said, it's not a straight line progression. You don't go out there and in the first shot collect all the data you need. Many times it has to be done in phases because the results of prior phases inform where and how you go look in subsequent phases. In addition, as the end uses of the property change, you might need to collect greater amounts of data in certain locations. And that was certainly the case here as we went from a commercial industrial closure to a residential closure. Residential closures, there's a higher standard of care there. It's important that we have all of the site completely characterized for all of the pathways of potential migration or exposure that would apply to a residential use. There have been 13 separate hydrogeologic investigations. There have been four since 2005, which is when we started our path towards this final wrap. Of the focused investigations since 2005, four were related to soil gas. You'll see shortly that the methane is an issue out at the site from both natural sources as well as potentially man-made or anthropogenic sources. And then five focused evaluations of wetland sediment or expanded hydrogeologic investigations to look at specific issues, delineating groundwater at the site perimeter. Next slide. not going to go through this slide. We put it together just to give you a sense of the scale of the investigations, the sheer number of soil borings, soil samples, groundwater samples, and monitoring wells that have been installed. Next slide. As I noted, there is a provision to conduct interim response actions along the way. And generally what happens is as you investigate a site, you might identify a condition that warrants action right now. You don't want to wait until you get through the end of the process and put a wrap forward. There might be real and compelling reasons to address the condition immediately. And so Genesco has gone forward since 1996, I think was the first one, and implemented a series of interim response actions, even while site evaluation was still underway toward development of this final wrap. I just want to detail these for you briefly. Collectively, they have substantially stabilized the site and achieved a high degree of source reduction. The first one, this is a little bit out of sequence from a timing standpoint, was to place riprap along the shoreline to stabilize conditions. There was erosion going on. That was conducted in 1996, followed in 1999 by the installation of what's called a sparge system along about 800 feet of the shoreline. A sparge system is a groundwater remediation system that removes volatile organics, organic compounds that are likely to be emitted in a vapor form in the air through stripping with air, and it removes those from groundwater. And that has been controlling venting of groundwater at the lakeshore since 99. Next slide. Oh, sure. I could point things out. Thank you. We'll be jumping back and forth to this slide. I hope it's legible from where you sit. Some of the features may be hard to make out. Do you want to just point out, Charlene, some of these features?
This is a site map that has a lot of features on it. It's a little bit cluttered with some borings and well locations, but there are several key features that we wanted to point out. I wish I didn't have a pointer. But and we'll come back to this as we talk about the different areas of the site. White Lake is out here. You can see it labeled here. I thought about putting some waves out here that we were already done. The tannery building is here in the center of the site. That's what the former location of the tannery building. Along the shoreline is where much of the investigation has been going on with the groundwater particularly. And as Alan said, in 1998 we installed the sparge system, which basically puts bubbles in the groundwater, bubbles up through and volatilizes any volatile contaminants, and basically chlorobenzene and dichlorobenzene, which is what we found, and removes those to a level that's safe for the groundwater that passes through that bubble curtain to discharge to the lake. The sparge line goes from about the south end of that peninsula, and south being to the right, down around the corner here, down around the bend, and about just about to where it says the southern area here. I don't know if you can see that label, but it's about 850 feet long. So that's the area that we were treating. There's some lower levels of chlorobenzene present in other groundwater that vents to the site. Groundwater flows out toward the lake from beneath the site. But the levels were not high enough to require any treatment. So that's where we were in 1998. Chlorobenzenes, dichlorobenzenes were the contaminants of concern, and they were in the groundwater that was venting or discharging to the lake, and it was a concern for aquatic receptors in the lake based on those levels. So the SPARC system is currently operating, has operated continuously.
Louder, please.
Sorry, the SPARC system has operated continuously since 1998 and it continues to remove the volatiles to levels that are safe for the lake. I think we can probably go back.
Next slide.
Where we were.
The next two interim response, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time dwelling on these, but I think it's important that everybody understand that a fair amount of remediation has been completed at the site already. There was a significant excavation and removal project conducted in the south area and north area to address some drum remnants that had been identified in those areas. These activities were conducted in 2000 and 2004, respectively. If we hop to that site figure, I can show the areas.
Go back.
There we go.
Thank you.
The areas in pink on the south side of the site, the south wetland area, indicate anomalies that were either identified through electromagnetic survey or even visually, because some of the drum remnants were visually evident at the surface. All of those areas were excavated and visually verified so that there were no further indications of drum remnant disposal or debris. And in addition, on the north side, thank you for the cursor. On the north side of the site, there was another excavation conducted. Do you want to give some details on that?
The north area as well, the most northern part, there's a blue line around that. Yeah. That's an area that we did some excavation and interim response as well. That area was investigated in great detail, and what we found up there was that in this blue area is a wetland area. This northern area has both upland and wetland areas, and what we found was when we investigated this wetland area that's outlined in blue was that there were tannery materials in the wetland below the water level or elevation line for wetland. And
we're a technical consulting firm, but we lack certain technologies. We depend on the generosity of others.
Yeah, and within this blue area, we did find some tannery materials, bits and pieces of leather, like trimmings, that sort of thing. There were some drum debris as well, not much as compared to down here. But we did find some VOCs, volatile organic contaminants. It was mainly xylene, that sort of thing, making you think that maybe there was some sort of a fuel release there within that leather material. And that leather material extended to a couple feet below grade to as much as 6.5 feet below grade. This area here is about 3/4 of an acre. In 2007, Genesco removed all of those materials from the wetland and disposed of those off-site and restored that area with clean sand fill and restored it as well as a improved wetland with some improved plantings. Let's go forward.
Back one.
Yeah, we met Mr. Up a little bit. We didn't go to the right side. That's good. Stay right there. Let's go forward on the green. And then go forward. This is slide 9. We didn't go in the right order. Okay, this is the wetland, the north area wetland after it was restored. Immediately after it was restored, actually this was the spring of 2008, and you can see that there's some monitoring wells there in the foreground. The lake is off to the top right. We have some material down there to hold our seed in place, and there are also wetland type plantings here. And go ahead and this is another view of the same thing, the lakes out here. Now this is most recently, and this date's correct here, the last few days, this year all of the grass is coming up, and this is kind of a typical grass planting here, and this is a specialized wetland grass planting here, and you can see some of the other plantings that we've got are coming up pretty good. Just a view back where you can see the wetland grass, the higher grass. This is a little bit of leftover clean fill. This kind of shows you that sand, the clean sand that was put back in this area after the tannery materials were removed. Okay. This is Brush Creek, which runs through the northern part of this area that was excavated. We had to actually divert it while we took some leather materials from the bed. And this is an up-to-date picture of Bush Creek. Water levels are up a little bit, mm-hmm. So you can see it's quite a bit higher here. And just another nice view of the restoration.
As Charlene indicated, the restoration of the wetland following the remedial work resulted in an enhanced wetland. The wetlands generally in the area tend to be homogenous. They have just one type of wetland vegetation. Efforts were exerted here to make sure that we would have a more diverse plant population when it's completely reestablished. And you'll see that as part of the 2009 RAP proposal, there'll be some additional wetlands work done, and again, attempting to enhance wetland values through the restoration efforts.
Yeah, these plantings that were selected with DEQ's review too, as well, to be high quality plantings for this type of wetland.
Okay, let's go back now.
Let's put it back up. You're going to have to go up. You got to grab a water. Just keep going up.
A couple more. That's good.
Yeah, let's go one more up. I think we skipped the slide down when we jumped to the... go back one.
One more. Back.
Hold on, she had it. Okay, let's go up.
This is good. This is fine right here.
No. The building.
Right here. I'm good. Okay.
Sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm good. Perfect. There was an additional interim response implemented to 2007 to address some empty ASTs, above ground storage tanks, that had historically stored fuels and chromic acid solution, which was used in the tanning process. These were empty ASTs, but obviously whenever you have large quantity storage, you're concerned about the potential for leaks. So in addition to removal of those tanks, there was investigation done in the footprint. Next slide. As you all know, the tannery building is down. It's been razed, and there was an extensive amount of work done during the demolition work to assess conditions in the building footprint. Obviously, when the building was there, it was difficult to do complete assessment of soil and groundwater conditions. But with the building removal, we were able to look much more closely at conditions. We on Horizon, on behalf of Genesco, inspected all the underlying soils, utilities, and structures associated with the former tannery operations. Obviously, it's a liquid-based process. There's trenches and pits and other things, all potential sources of release. We wanted to make sure that we were looking very closely as the building slabs were pulled up for evidence of release. There's various tools, field screening tools, that are employed in that type of a process. One of them is this PID or photoionization detector, which is able to detect volatile organic contamination. Very little evidence associated with any of those structures. The DEQ was working in close consultation and was up frequently during this period. There were 93 soil samples collected and analyzed for extensive chemical scans. In any area where we had a suspicion or a concern or registered any field indicia of contamination, there were six areas, very small in size, that were addressed during the course of the demolition, either through soil excavation or removal of waste. At the end of the process, all source areas were addressed. And so now that building footprint has been thoroughly characterized.
Yeah, that's just to wrap up the northern, I think we covered everything here.
These are just some details on the extent of the work in the northern wetland. I don't think we have
5,000 tons of material removed. We did take verification samples around the edges of the excavation and found that we've met the objectives for that particular excavation. And again, it was restored as an enhanced wetland.
Okay. This is the next part of the presentation. The intent here is to explain to you folks what remaining issues existed. We endeavored coming out of 2005 to work very closely with the state to get a list of deficiencies or comments or technical concerns associated with that 2005 RAP so that we could push this thing to development and approval of a final remedial action plan. I want to just briefly cover with you what those issues were so that you're aware of them, and then that will take us logically into a description of the scope of the final remedial action plan. There were four primary categories of issues. I don't want to give you the impression there were just four comments. There were a lot of comments and concerns, but they could be generally categorized into four groupings. There were issues related to the groundwater surface water interface pathway. This is one of the pathways that's regulated under Part 201. It is a pathway that concerns itself with the discharge of groundwater to surface water. It covers both human health and aquatic concerns. In this instance, the DEQ's comments were largely focused on aquatic concerns because, of course, the sparge system was functioning to address volatile organics. The questions were largely related to contaminants that weren't going to be addressed by the air sparging remedial technology. Those included ammonia and mercury. So there was additional work done to delineate and evaluate the extent of ammonia and mercury in groundwater. There was additional wells installed to assess hydrologic conditions in wetland areas. There was concerns that the actual GSI compliance point or discharge wasn't just the lake, but that some of the wetlands on the north and south side might be discharge points that we need to concern ourselves for groundwater. So there was extensive work done there, and then there was investigation in the south wetland area for mercury in soils. Methane, I think it's one other article of faith you can take with any regulatory program is that it's constantly changing. Methane was not on the radar screen when the 2005 RAP was submitted, but I think there were some rather prominent sites up north where methane became a large issue, and the state put out some guidance suggesting that where certain conditions existed, methane needs to be assessed. The conditions could be either natural or man-made, man-created. In this instance, we've got a little bit of both. We've got peat in a lacustrine environment in reducing conditions. You may get methane produced in those conditions just naturally. And in addition, some of the disposal practices with tannery residuals could also be contributing to it. So there was a rather extensive soil gas survey done to assess the presence of methane site-wide. And then lastly, source control evaluation. As I mentioned, there was an extensive amount of source control completed, but the question was, do we need to supplement it? Does there need to be any additional work done to get after source material? I'm going to go through these four issues very quickly with you, and then we'll get into the RAP scope. Next slide. The 2005 RAP put forward a groundwater capture system. As I indicated, the sparging only addresses volatile organics. The investigations that were conducted subsequent to that indicated non-volatile compounds like ammonia and mercury needed to be addressed for aquatic concerns. So the proposal in the 2005 RAP was to put a capture system that consists of extraction wells, either vertical or horizontal wells, along the shoreline to capture water in order to manage that those new concerns. There were extensive investigations since 2005 to help refine the scope of that groundwater remedy, largely related to trying to delineate where that capture system needed to be located and how it needed to be configured in order to achieve compliance with the GSI criteria. We also assessed groundwater flow conditions in the south wetland area. There is no issue. The primary purpose of that assessment was to see if there was discharge of site-related groundwater that may have some of these contaminants, ammonia or mercury, into that wetland. Those investigations did not indicate that the wetland was being adversely impacted. largely because it was determined not to be a discharge zone. Instead, it's a recharge zone. It wasn't determined the groundwater from the site was discharging the wetland. It was that water was actually recharging the aquifer. But a contingent remedy is being proposed as part of the 2009 RAP to address the potential for hydrologic conditions to change and for groundwater to vent to this southern wetland in the future, because obviously lake levels and groundwater tables go up and down over time. So we want to be able to have some contingent measure in place should the hydrologic conditions change in the future. But right now, there's no indication that south wetland is being adversely impacted by site groundwater. In addition, a presumptive remedy consisting of installation of sheet piling to prevent the flow of perched groundwater from the on-site upland area to the restored wetland has also been proposed. This system is undergoing design. We're doing some additional investigative work, basis of design data collection that we can give to our engineers to help finalize that design. And it will be implemented upon approval of the 2009 voluntary RAP. Do you have anything to add?
Nope.
This sheet piling full barrier, would it divert that water then?
Currently, the sheet piling flow barrier is planned for very shallow groundwater in the south wetland area and in the area in the southern part of the site. There's an underlying peat layer that perches some shallow groundwater above a underlying aquifer. And it just has a little bit of water in it, but some of that water is impacted. We studied the hydraulics of the wetland and the adjacent upland area to see if the deeper groundwater flowed up into the wetland. We found that it didn't, largely because of this peat that kind of isolates the shallow water. And then we looked at the water that sits above the peak on the upland area to see if it flowed back into the wetland, and we found that it didn't. But what we decided to do was, as Alan said, the contingent remedy is to install a groundwater collection system in the deeper unit below and not to run it unless we see water levels change that show discharge to the wetland. And in the upper unit, where we have some perched water sitting on top of the peat, we're going to drive some sheet piling in down and key it into the peat so that that water, and it's just a small amount of water, but it is impacted, doesn't flow back into the wetland, particularly after we restore the wetland in the future. So it's a flow barrier to prevent any movement of shallow contaminants. And it'll be installed probably at the same time that the wetland work is done.
Okay, next slide. In addition to those presumptive and contingent remedies to address groundwater, there's been some significant investigation of sediment quality, and there will be a presumptive remedy to remove affected sediments and restore the wetland. There is mercury that has been detected in the sediments that needs to be addressed, and that will be part of the proposed plan. I believe, in fact, that a conceptual work plan has been put forward, and there's agreement in principle with the state on that remedial element. Next slide. Methane, I won't spend a lot of time on this. I think I've covered it already. The reality is that there were a number of investigations, four in total, conducted to assess the presence of methane site-wide. It was determined that it is present over the site. It's only a condition if you're going to have structures present. There are no structures present in which that gas could accumulate, and there are relatively simple engineering controls that can be put in place to mitigate that concern. And so, in fact, the 2009 VRAP that will be put forward will provide a restrictive covenant on the deed that will require structures at this site to include that simple engineering control. Next slide. Source control evaluation. As I've mentioned, the IRAPs that have been implemented have gotten a lot of the source material off the site. There still remains some source mass. Largely present in the lagoon areas, the former lagoon areas. The question arose during evaluation of the proposed groundwater capture system whether there were other supplements or adjuncts in the form of source control that could be added to the remedy that would enhance its protectiveness or reliability. So a source control evaluation was undertaken to answer that question. It focused on the former lagoon area and to a lesser extent the south wetland area as possible contributing sources of the mercury and the ammonia, which were the drivers for this groundwater remedy. Extensive investigation was done. Engineers determined that there were some potential options, including solidification, isolation, or excavation and removal. But in the end, it was determined that removal of that material would not enhance the remedy. Even if that source mass was removed, it wouldn't change the scope of the groundwater capture system. We'd still have to have that in place. It wouldn't enhance the protectiveness of it. And it wouldn't change the duration that we have to capture and treat water at the site in any material way. But through discussions with the DQ, it was determined that potentially isolation through installation of a barrier wall might provide the benefit of enhanced reliability of the capture system. And so as part of the 2009 VRAP proposal, we've added a partial wall between the lagoons and the capture system to enhance the reliability of that groundwater capture system. Do you have anything to add? Okay, next slide. So. This is the last section of the presentation, and we will be going over the elements of the proposed RAP. Largely these things are driven by the conclusions that were reached through the investigative and evaluative work conducted since the 2005 VRAP was put forward. The first and perhaps most significant element of the 2009 VRAP is the design and construction of that groundwater capture system. If we could go to the figure, we can...
This heavy red line that runs where the spark system is, but extends farther to the south beyond that is the area along the shoreline that the groundwater capture system and the physical barrier will be constructed and operate to prevent groundwater flowing through this area from venting to the lake. So we will be The physical barrier here, it's probably going to be a slurry wall or some sort of sheet piling that's impermeable, will control the flow of groundwater here, and we will have wells positioned behind this to pump that groundwater and prevent it from discharging to the lake across this line. In addition, we will have some vertical wells in this north area. There's a small area of higher ammonia concentrations up there that we want to capture. So because the SPARC system doesn't do anything to remove ammonia or low-level mercury, what we're going to do is switch to a system that basically just captures the water, prevents it from flowing into the lake.
And then treats it and discharges it to the POTW.
Treats it and discharges it where?
To the sanitary sewage plant, the publicly owned treatment works.
Can you repeat that one more time?
Sure. The groundwater capture system consists of a series of extraction wells or horizontal trenches that suck up the water at the shoreline, treat it, and discharge it to the wastewater treatment plant.
Thank you.
This system here will be operated in a manner that does prevent the flow of any groundwater to the lake, and we'll be monitoring that with